Okay, dear students, welcome to our second presentation on our culture of consumption scandals, and that is scandal number one, cars. Now, in the face-to-face class, I warn the students, this is a very raw video, and we show it. And I tell them, you know, if you're upset by horrible things happening to people because of cars and drinking and other peccadilloes that we humans are guilty of, then close your eyes, because it's pretty brutal. A discussion of cars is a discussion of America. When the history of the United States in the 20th and early 21st century is written 500,000 years from now, it will be our love affair with the car. So what we've seen is that cars have gotten a whole lot more safer, and the number of accidents and the number of deaths was trending down until the pandemic. And now people are driving far more faster, far more recklessly, far more distracted. And the truth is, cars have gotten much safer than they used to be. But there's one component that they really can't work on, and that's the humans. And so eventually, I'm hoping, and I know there are people working desperately, is that we remove the driver, remove the human from the equation. It's going to take decades, because even if we do come up with tomorrow a self-driving car that is, you know, 99.99% a lot safer than a human, there's going to be a whole lot more cars on the roads with humans for decades. But that's the situation we're in now. So please do, you're the component in the car that is the most dangerous part of driving. We lose tens of thousands of people every year. If this were a plane crash, you know, people would be screaming and hollering if we lost tens of thousands of people in planes. But because it's cars, oh, it's okay. So please do watch this and realize that the state of Victoria in Australia had a very serious problem. Highest per capita deaths in cars than anywhere else in Australia. And so they embarked upon a public education campaign. And this is the 20th year anniversary. It's very brutal, but it's won all kinds of awards, and they've reduced their deaths by half. So it worked somewhat. So this I call to the chapter 6 emphasis, appendix, highlight, focus on buying and operating motor vehicles, because in our cash flow statement, typically the number two, the second highest item is our cars. And I try to, again, use humor and not just bang you over the head with my radical ideas about driving as opposed to my radical ideas about consumerism, and try to get you to understand that you are not what you drive. At the end of the presentation, in face-to-face, we show on the screen the Consumer Reports reliability statistics. And that seemed to be the thing that people were most interested in, and other than me burbling about cars and people talking about cars. So I started doing it at the beginning of the presentation and said, if you don't want to stick around for the rest, that's up to you. I can't do that face-to-face online, because it's copyrighted material. I can show it in the classroom. So what I hope you'll do is go to the library. If you want to go online, then you have to pay. They don't give it away for free. And show you the reliability statistics. Because to me, that's the most important issue, in my humble opinion. So let's continue here. Let's start with some statistics. Percentages of short motor vehicle trips. In the United States, about half of the trips are 3 miles or less. 40% are 2 miles or less, and a quarter are 1 mile or less. Folks, people would, because I used to ride my bike to work. I haven't been riding my bike because I haven't been at Southwestern for years because of the pandemic. But when people would realize that I rode there to work, they would say, oh my goodness, I could never ride. Oh, it's so far. So how far is it? Oh, it's 3 miles. 3 miles. Do you realize you can walk 3 miles in less than an hour? And if you do that two or three times a week, just do it twice a week, you will have done most all of the exercise, cardio exercise that you need to do for the entire week. So how about this? Park a half a mile away from work and walk the rest of the way. How about that? I don't know. The average American uses as much energy as three Japanese, 13 Chinese, 153 Bangladeshis, and 499 Ethiopians. Gas mileage usually decreases rapidly at speeds over 50 miles an hour. You can assume that each 5 mile per hour you drive over 50 miles per hour, is like paying additional 15 cents per gallon of gas. So now people, I was very happy when around town, the speed limit was 55. Other people were really upset. I can't drive 55. It was a popular song many years ago. And now people are driving 75, 80. So you're spending an extra 50, 60 cents a gallon by driving 70 miles an hour. Oh, well, is it worth it to you? And what people don't understand is when you speed, you don't really save that much time. You might save a minute or two. Plus, it's a hell of a lot more dangerous. Again, you don't want to hear that, some of you. My apologies. But that's my story. I'm sticking with it. For every gallon of gas you burn, how much carbon dioxide do you pump into the atmosphere? It's about 20 pounds. Wait a minute. A gallon weighs about 7 pounds. How do you get 20 pounds of carbon dioxide from 7 pounds of gasoline? Well, gasoline is a mixture of a lot of different things, but mostly it's octane, C8H12. Now, this is not balanced. Talk to your chemistry professor just to balance it. But you take carbon in the form of octane it's called, 8 carbons with 12 hydrogens around them. You add oxygen and explode the stuff, burn it, and you get water. Huh? Yeah, right. If you see a car that's just starting off, you look at out the tailpipe, you'll see water. But once the engine gets hot, it turns into steam. And then you get carbon dioxide. So why does 7 pounds of octane become 20 pounds of carbon dioxide? Because you're replacing the hydrogen, which is 1/16th the volume of oxygen. Actually, I think it's even less of oxygen. And replacing it with, I'm sorry, yes, less than 1/16th of the weight of oxygen, and you're replacing the hydrogen with the carbon with oxygen. And that's, don't tell your Republican friends, but this stuff is the stuff that's causing global warming. It's not the only one out there, but it's the big one. And so the fewer gallons of gas you burn, the fewer 20-pound carbon dioxide chunks you're putting into the atmosphere. How much oil do we import? Do anybody know? It's actually down to zero. We're now an exporter of oil. But for almost two decades, we imported over 60% of our oil. What happened to the United States? Well, we tend to, underestimate ourselves. We tend to take ourselves for granted. But the oil industry has done phenomenal things with our extraction of oil in the United States. Now, some of it's a little, first of all, I wish they had come up with a better name, fracking. That's not a very good name. And it's got some issues, and there's some people upset about certain things about it. But for the most part, we have reduced our consumption of imported oil. And we were, for many years, sending hundreds of dollars. Each man, woman, and child in the United States was sending hundreds of dollars overseas to Saudi Arabia and Venezuela and other countries that don't necessarily have our best interest at heart. But not anymore. How many barrels of oil do we consume each year? It's about 22 every man, woman, and child. 7.22 billion barrels of oil divided by 331 million people. Now, a barrel of crude oil is not the same as the gasoline you put in your car. It has to be refined, but it's the same idea. We are using, each of us, 22, almost 42 gallons of crude oil. So look at what's happened. In 1970, when people drove around in their living rooms with bench seats in the front, you could fit 3 or 4 people in the front of the car, it was 26.3. And then by 1978, at the peak, when cars were just huge, it was 31 barrels per person. Now, what happened in 1979? The first one was not so bad, 73, 1973. But the second oil crunch was pretty tough. And if you want to, just type in, you know, second oil crunch or 1979 oil crunch, and you'll see pictures of people sitting in line, you know, 2 miles long waiting to get gas. And we said, you know, we got to do something seriously. And so within 5 years, look what happened. We reduced our consumption by, you know, like almost, what, 30% or so? Unbelievable. And then gas got cheap again, and we all started driving around our refrigerator, I mean, in our living rooms again, with sport utility land barges, and it went back up to 26.5 in 2000. Look, 30 years where we basically just wasted it. And then by 2007, it was 25.4. And now look at what's happened. Much more cars are much more fuel efficient than they were. And it's been very beneficial, but we're still using too much oil. We're still pumping too much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. So, I'm sorry, before the last thing I was going to say, electric cars. We don't really discuss those too much in our presentation. We mostly talk about reliability and the cost and other stuff. But electric cars are coming. The industry realizes that. There's a couple of companies like Toyota and Honda are sort of dragging their feet. But most all the other companies are going, this is where we have to go. And it was so bizarre. You know, we touchy-feely liberal types like me, bleeding heart, as my buddy likes to call me. I say, no, I'm a fuzzy-headed liberal. When it comes to the environment and society and the like, when it comes to economics, I'm, you know, I'm a stockbroker, so I'm on the other side. But we thought, you know, you emphasize the reliability of electric cars. Emphasize the fact that these motors will last forever. Well, not forever, but they're going to outlive you. Now, the batteries are an issue, right? You have to replace the batteries. But the reliability, there's no oil, there's no water radiator. It's just so much more reliable, so much. No. That's not what people were interested in. I'm the worst person to be doing this, I guess. What Tesla did, now, Elon Musk is the head of Tesla, but he didn't actually start it. It was started by two other engineers who thought, let's do this. Let's emphasize the speed and the power of electric cars, because electric cars are far more powerful given the same amount of resources that that you place into the car than oil burning cars. Now, of course, once you get into the $1 million car range, these cars, you know, if you were to buy a $1 million electric car, that would with all special stuff, that you're not comparing apples to apples. But Tesla came out with a car that cost about $100,000, you know, up and down, and it could outperform $400,000 cars, $300,000 Lamborghinis and Ferraris. Now, at the top end, it doesn't go as quite as fast, but it can out-accelerate those cars and make it really cool and a high technology. And it worked. People, they want those cars. You know, I thought, oh my goodness, I don't want to spend that much money for a car. I want something that's reliable. It's going to last forever. No. Other people said, no, I'm used to buying $80,000 Audi or a BMW or a Mercedes or Lexus. I'm going to take a look at these Teslas. Genius. Unbelievable genius. And Elon Musk, about 10 years ago, said, look, I don't care if Tesla folds. That's not my goal. My goal is to change the industry to electric. And he's done both. Tesla has succeeded. And he's, you know, basically one company, Tesla, has shown the rest of the industry that, no, this is what people want. And people are clamoring for them. There's another company based here in San Diego called Aptera. They are outdoing Tesla with coming up with the most aerodynamic car you can imagine. It looks like a plane. And people have sent in, you know, I think it's $100, but thousands of people have sent in $100 saying, I want one of these things. So we'll see what happens. We'll see that this number, let's hope this number just flies lower. Let's hope it does. Let's see. Okay, so enough of that, Piano. Okay, I burbled on for 14 minutes. My apologies. Which do you prefer? Newer used cars. And in the face-to-face class, we try to get people to talk about their experiences with cars. Do they want a new car? Do they want a used car? And of course, there are pros and cons. New cars are certainly much more expensive than a used car. They're more reliable. They get more service. Used cars are cheaper, but you have to be careful. So let's talk about used cars. Where do you get sources of used cars? New car dealers love used cars because they make more money off of them, believe it or not. That's right. They make more money off the used cars. Used car dealers have a very bad reputation, and private parties have much lower prices, but actually they're the worst for service. What I hope you will do before you buy your next car. Now, I know you're the advertisements, right? They're gonna try to get you to think, the wind blowing through my hair with that convertible sports car, whatever. Go to their website or go to the library and check out their April issue or the yearly buying guide, and you will see the reliability statistics. And this is what we would show on the screen, and people were just blown away that the Japanese are so much more reliable than the United States car companies, and the United States car companies are more reliable than the German car companies. Now, that didn't used to be the case, but the German cars have gotten so sophisticated that the reliability statistics are not very good. In fact, the Tesla is so sophisticated that their reliability statistics are not very good. And that doesn't mean that that you're going to have a whole lot of problems with the car. You're going to have a whole lot of weird problems that just, you know, are not... The electric motor is going to last forever. But there are other weird things with the technology. I mean, why do you need to have a touch screen to open up the glove compartment? It just doesn't make any sense to me. But that's what people want, I guess. So who am I talking to? I'm talking to you. So you decide. You decide where you get your information about used cars. I hope you'll use Consumer Reports and then realize, oh yeah, that Jeep Cherokee doesn't really have very good reliability. Maybe I ought to look at a Toyota or a Honda. Boring. Okay, inspecting the car. My humble opinion, find an honest mechanic, pay for an inspection, because you really don't know. You really don't know. There's a whole industry of where they take cars that have been crashed or are in a flood or whatever and whitewash the salvage on the title, send them from one state to another. So you can check Carfax. The last used car I bought came with a Carfax. It was part of the selling feature that the person who sold it to me used. But then I got something in the mail saying this car might have been it might be salvaged, and I looked up. I had my mechanic look at it. He said, no, this is based. It was a car that came off a lease, and the person obviously took very, very good care of it. I think somebody was just trying to yank my chain and try to get me to join some kind of class action suit, but I'm pretty sure the car was not salvaged because the person who owned it lived in Hollywood. They still had their address in the navigation system, and I'm pretty sure it was a she because I could smell the perfume, and it was off lease, and the package was from Toyota of Hollywood, so I'm pretty sure it wasn't salvaged, but you're never really quite sure. Okay. How do you negotiate prices? Well, Edmunds, NADA, National Association of Dealers, I'm not sure who said what that stands for, and then Kelley Blue Book, I don't trust any of them. I go to Craigslist and realize that those prices are even inflated. And what I did, and he came with me to buy it, was consult a friend who is a car enthusiast. I had him come with me, and then the mechanic took a look at it afterwards before I actually plunked down the money. And because I don't really like cars, I didn't even have a car for a while. That's a whole other story. That's what I would recommend. Forget these guys, because I think Kelley Blue Book is way overpriced. I think they jack up the prices so that the dealers can go, look, it's below Kelley Blue Book. Look at what personal individuals are selling them and dealers on Craigslist. And then realize that you should be able to negotiate from there. All right, now, buying a new car. Half of all new vehicle purchases involve some internet interaction. The dealers know this. I mean, the manufacturers and the dealers know this. They want to get you online first. Would you consider buying it online? That's what some people do. the average cost of a new vehicle exceeds $33,000. Now, this is from the AAA. USA Today says it's $48,000. I'm not sure what's going on here. I think $48,000 is way too much, but $33,000 might be a little low. Either, it's a major purchase. And as soon as you drive it off the lot, 20% is gone. Do you understand? As soon as you drive it off the lot, 20% of that price is gone. So you bought it for $33,000. As soon as you drive it off the lot, you'd be lucky to sell it for $26,000 or $27,000. So that's what you're up against when you buy a new vehicle. Depreciation. Don't be swayed by the advertisements. Check Consumer Reports. Do I sound like a broken record? Again, you can keep the car just like the beer, but I will take the woman. No, she doesn't come with the car. Darn, oh darn, oh darn. Now, the service contract. Unless the car you want has a less than stellar repair record, again, check Consumer Reports. Stay away from these things. It's basically an insurance policy, and the insurance companies are not stupid. We're going to talk about insurance in a couple of chapters. How do you know an insurance company is making money? Their doors are open. The cards are stacked against you. You might even be told that the service contract is required by the lender or the leasing company. It is not. But the dealers make, this is where they don't make their money selling the cars. They make money off of selling their financing and selling the service contract and selling you the other $99. A friend of mine was charged $99 for nitrogen to put in his wheels, his tires. $99 for nitrogen. Okay, fine. Look, once they have the sale, once they know, okay, you're going to buy, they're going to put you in a little interrogation room with bright garish lights, and a greasy little man with bad breath, bad teeth, and the smell of cheap cigars will then work you over, trying to get you to agree to purchase a service contract, undercoating, upholstery spray, as well as a timeshare in Cancun. Tell them if they try to put you in that little room, you're going to leave immediately because they're going to do it. This is where they make their money, off of these service contracts and selling you, you know, upholstery spray from a $12 can. They charge you $200. So be careful, be careful, be careful. But if you really do want that very unreliable car, it might make sense. But the insurance company's not stupid. They're gonna say, oh, yeah, we don't cover this, we don't cover that, we don't cover that, because they know it's already going to fail. So the cards just act against you. Now, how do you negotiate the price? Well, dealers have been much more tricky given the pandemic, given the supply issues. They've been asking people to pay more than the sticker price, and the manufacturers are getting a little upset about this. So again, this I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but Tesla has been pushing it. They're not the only ones. But they don't want to deal with dealers. They don't want to have the dealer model. Most states, not all, but many states make it. You can't sell a car unless you sell it through a dealership. Now, I don't know what sweetheart deal that was done, and I don't know how it has survived federal trade laws about restraint of trade and the ability to buy who buy what you want from who you want. So I'm not sure exactly how they passed those tests, but Tesla and a few other companies are trying to get away from the dealer model because, let's face it, folks, the dealers, they're now calling them stealerships. You might hear that in the news, or you might hear people call them stealerships. So it's, of course, when it's a buyer's market and they have too many cars, which will probably happen in about a year or so, they're going to have too many cars when the supply chain issues are dealt with. You're going to see the dealers saying, well, please buy our cars and we'll mark them down. So one of the things, as we said, the dealers are going to try to do is sell you a service contract. They're also going to try to sell you sell you financing. Go to your credit union, get pre-approved if you're going to finance it, because then you can just say, okay, I have my financing. Would you buy online? Would you buy a car online without even seeing it? Some people are. I don't know, but that's up to you. You can ask Consumer Reports, Edmunds, Kiplinger's to show you the dealer's cost, to show you what the dealers actually pay. Now, that's not actually what they pay, though. It's very convoluted. At the end of the month, If the dealers, and they basically set it up so that they do, almost always, the very last day, make their quota, and if they do sell as many cars as you're supposed to sell, they will get an incentive check that basically lowers the price anywhere from 3 to 5%. So when is the dealer's cost, not the dealer's cost? When the month, when the factory's monthly incentive check comes in at the end of the month. However, it's a very dysfunctional relationship between the manufacturers and the dealerships. It's been cataloged in the news and in other media outlets. One website called thisamericanlife.org followed a dealership as they barely made their monthly quota and got their incentive check just at the very last moment. It was very bizarre. So, would you finance through a bank or credit union or finance company? Dealer financing, folks, again, this is where they make much of their money, not off the selling and sales of the car. So be careful. Talk to your credit union, get pre-approved, and know that unless you put down a pretty big amount, at least 20%, you're going to have what's called negative equity, upside-down equity. Say you bought that car for $33,000 and you only put $3,000 down. So now you owe $30,000 on a car that as soon as you drive it off the lot is only worth $26,000. You see what's going to happen? If you, on the way home, get in an accident, the insurance company is going to say, yeah, we'll pay you $26,000. That's why we're going to talk when we get to Chapter 8 about what's called guaranteed asset protection, gap insurance. So that the insurance company goes, okay, the first year, if the car gets in a crash, we'll pay you the amount it would cost you to buy a new car. Or we'll make your entire loan whole, at the very least. But remember, the dealers want you to finance through them because that's part of how they actually make money, not just selling the car. Now, leasing a vehicle. Would you lease a vehicle? Well, it's just a fancy word for renting. There are advantages. There's a smaller cash outflow, lower monthly payments and buying, and some businesses like it for various accounting reasons. But folks, it's going to cost you far more. You don't own the car. You don't own it. You must meet certain requirements. And if you use more miles, that's how I knew this person took good care of the car, because it only had 29,888 miles on it. So obviously they had a 10,000-mile lease, right? 10,000 per year. They only could drive it 10,000 miles a year. If they went over that amount, then they're going to get hit 25 cents a mile or whatever. So you are almost guaranteed to spend far more over the long term leasing rather than buying, assuming you're not the kind of person that wants to have a new car every 2 or 3 years. If you're the kind of person who wants to have a new car every 2 or 3 years, well, then you might as well lease. Because you're going to wind up spending a fortune over your working career owning cars, or actually leasing cars or owning cars, and you don't have to deal with getting rid of the car. You don't have to deal with selling the car. And remember, there's a saying, if you walk into the dealership with a trade-in, it's like a flashing light on your head saying, charge me more. Yeah. So you don't even want to talk about any kind of trade-in. And what there have been some instances of people being held hostage. They say, oh yeah, give us the keys. We'll gussy up your car while we talk about a new car. And then supposedly they go and clean it or whatever. And then, oh my goodness, we can't find the keys. We can't find the car. Let's keep talking about the new car you're going to buy. No, I want to leave now. Why, we can't find the car. Come on, let's keep talking. So I don't know how true these anecdotal stories are, but still, if you are the kind of person who wants to buy a new car every few years, you might as well lease. You might as well lease. Okay, now, leasing a car, though, gives an excellent opportunity for us tightwads who want to buy, you know, a car in good shape, a few years old, but don't want to, you know, have the 20% drop in just 5 minutes. The large number of leases creates an excellent opportunity for used car buyers. So a 3-year lease of a $50,000 sport utility land barge, I'm sorry, sport utility tank, sport utility vehicle, 50 grand. Okay. Well, in the contract, there was a residual value, a lease end value of 34,000. After 3 years, they tell you, hey, you can buy this vehicle for 34,000. Well, the lessee, the person who does the leasing, they want a new car every 3 years. So they say, no, thanks. Here's the keys. Take the car. Now they have to go sell it. And they're going to be lucky if they can sell it for $20,000 to $24,000, depending on, you know, what shape it's in, what the desirability is. So this is what yours truly did for the last car that I bought. I found a company that sold cars off lease, that have gone off lease. And I took my buddy with me, and then I called up our mechanic, and he said it's a brand new vehicle, basically. I was really lucky. And spent half, basically half, of what it was worth when it was new. So there you go, folks. Or buy a used reliable Econo box. No, you don't want to hear that. Don't forget that. Anyway, what kind of vehicle? What kind of vehicle are we interested in? Well, according to our authoritative and detailed scientific research, we have found that the larger the motor vehicle, the smaller the IQ of the driver, the more fragile the ego of the driver, or the greater the sense of powerlessness within and anger toward the society around them, or is it the more microscopic the reproductive organ? Obviously, it's all of the above. Now, my apologies, my sincerest apologies to those of you who own a Ford Extinction. Not really. You know, folks, some people need a big car. Most people who drive around in them don't. They just want a big car. You know, people say, "Well, we tow our trailer to the Colorado River twice a year." Okay, how about just renting a pickup truck or an SUV? Oh, that's a good idea. And what you'll save in gas alone will pay for the. Anyway, at that again, this is a very subjective thing. Cars and people are what they drive. At least that's what they believe. I don't believe that. But here you go, folks. What I really don't like, personally, again, you're listening to this, thank you very much, are the huge pickup trucks with the huge tires driving around town in a pickup truck with huge tires. And, enough said. Well, there's a little story that I was going to tell you about, but I used to be a computer nerd, and I was programming at a group where 7 guys and 1 woman, and she was brilliant. She's a phenomenal programmer. And of course, all the guys just loved her because she's a female nerd, which are not too many. And we had gone to lunch, and we're walking out of the parking lot, and this big, I don't even think it was a pickup truck, it was like a Ford Excursion or something like that. Huge tires, squeals the wheels, peels out or whatever you want to call it. And she said, small reproductive organ. And I wish I was quick enough, but the other guy said, I have a Honda Civic. And I said, I have a Toyota Tercel. And so that was a long time ago, folks, more than 30 years ago, but it was funny. I thought it was funny. Anyway, that's the story. Okay, let's continue. Okay, finally, we get to something that may actually be useful to you. My apologies. And that is the cost of operating a car. The depreciation is often the one thing that people just don't think about. After 3 years, a typical used car is worth 50% of what it was worth new. After 5 years, it's 65%. After 10 years, it's typically 10 to 15%. Cars depreciate. Don't anybody say I'm making an investment in a car. There are some cars that you can invest in, but they are few and far between. And these are collectibles from, you know, many years ago. And then there are $1 million cars that people buy and put in a garage and just hope that they go up in price, like Ferraris and Bugattis and all these other cars. But for a car that you use, that is not an investment. It is an expense. So there's the finance charge, the insurance, the license, registration, and taxes, and these are fixed. You pay for them whether you use the car or not. Now, gas and oil, tires, maintenance, repairs, parking and tolls, those are variable costs. And now in the face-to-face class, we would pass out the little little instrument where we ask you to rank what you think is the most expensive to the least expensive, and then we show you the numbers. So check that out. It's on Canvas and it's on the website. And it's a bit of an eye-opener, I think, for most people, because most people think gas, so I'm tipping my hat, my apologies, most people think gas is the most expensive thing. And it is not cheap. Now, this is for a mid-size car costing about $33,000 a year, operated 15,000 miles a year for 5 years. So it's amortized. But remember, if you spent a lot more than the car, you bought a luxury car for $80,000 a year, or you bought an Econobox, those numbers are going to change, and that's why you should take a look at the AAA Your Driving Cost document that I think is pretty reliable. I think so. You know, it hasn't been my experience because I don't buy new cars, and I don't even like cars. I don't even want cars, but that's a whole other story. But remember, a car is not an investment. It is an expense, and for the vast majority of people, it's the second most expensive item on their cash flow statement. Now, according to the AAA, what is the average cost per mile to own and operate a new medium-sized sedan in 2000? That should be 22. I have to change that. My apologies. It's actually 71 cents, 71 and a half cents. So at 15,000 miles per year, that is over $10,000. This year, 2022, the cost of operating a mid-sized car, $33,000, over the 5 years is over $10,000. And many families have two cars, so you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars over your working career. Now, back in the 1980s, they did have cars in the 1980s, folks. Jonathan Pond, I don't even know what happened to him. He's a brilliant, brilliant financial writer and the like. He did a study where you buy a new car every 4 years, versus buying a new car every 10 years. And 1980s is when reliability really started to tick up, where you could keep a car for 10 years and not have to worry. I kept one car for, 17 years? I was so proud of myself. Investing the savings, including the cost of maintenance, at the end of 40 years, you would have had $350,000. Now, those were $1980. Triple it for now. My advice is buy a reliable new, better yet, used car, check the reliability statistics, run it into the ground. Again, other people say, are you crazy? I want to know. It's all subjective. So anyway, servicing your car. Do you follow the maintenance schedule in the manual? I think some of it's fluff. They want you to come in and check the fluids, like what's going to happen to them, right? Especially a new car. But yes, find an honest mechanic, stay loyal to them. There's a wonderful website called Car Talk, and there's others, where you can check on the, it's kind of like Yelp for mechanics, and check on what people say about these other mechanics. But be careful of these discount stores where they say, yeah, we'll do an oil change for $29.95, and then we'll sell you a bunch of other stuff that you really don't need, but you can't leave without buying it because we're going to hound you until you buy it. The dealerships, again, called the dealerships, and this is one thing that Tesla, speaking of this groundbreaking company, they've been really attacked because at their authorized, they don't have dealers, they have authorized shops that do the repairs, they charge a fortune. And people are saying that they go somewhere else, they can get the stuff done for a hell of a lot cheaper. So I have an honest mechanic. I can give you his name and number if you're interested. He's awesome. And we've known him for years. He's a very beloved friend also. So if you're interested, contact me. He won't give me a kickback or anything. I don't think he will. Anyway, I wouldn't accept it if he did. Eduardo. So contact me about Eduardo. So that is servicing your car. Do it. Do it. If you want to keep the car till the wheels fall off, make sure you change the oil. Make sure you have the service done. Talk to your mechanic. Be proactive. I love that word, proactive. It's a buzzword. It means don't wait for things to fall apart. And then the bottom line on cars, in my humble opinion, my apologies if I've been a little bit preachy, but I am. Cars are an expense, and some people spend a fortune on their cars. Get a bicycle. Get a scooter. Get a motorcycle. I have a little motor scooter that I use, and I have my bicycle, and I got rid of my car for a few years, I was doing great on my little bicycle and my scooter until some jerk hit me who, you know, he tried to act like it was my fault. And the witness told the cop, no, it was him. He ran into him. I was going very slowly, folks. I wasn't going very fast. And this guy just sort of bumped me, knocked me over. And so I bought a car. Oh, well. Get training. Bicycles, scooters, motorcycles are not inherently dangerous. It's the people in the cars that make them very dangerous. Although some people do ride motorcycles, scooters, and bicycles in a manner that is not safe. If you're on a bicycle, don't ride on the left side of the road. Ride on the right side of the road, folks. You know, wear a helmet. People say, oh, he wasn't wearing a helmet when a car hit him. You don't wear a helmet because of cars. You wear a helmet because the biggest accident, I mean, the most frequent accident is falling off the bike. That's why you wear a helmet, because the ground is hard. And then scooters, and I love my scooter. I love my little scooter. So I have more than 58,000 miles on my commuting bikes. People still think I do this. I'm a lot older. I used to ride 2-3 times a day from Ocean Beach down to Southwestern. It's about 20 miles one way. And people just thought I was nuts, but I had the time of my life. I felt so good, felt so great, but I haven't done it since the pandemic. Oh, well. At 71.5 cents a mile, that means I've saved over $40,000 in vehicle costs. But of course, it's not really not that much because it was cheaper 20 years ago, right? And plus, I've saved a tremendous amount in healthcare costs, folks. Exercise. If exercise were a pill, every doctor would be prescribing it every single day, right? And before I started riding again, I was a paunchy 30-something male suffering from sedentary lifestyle disease. Now I'm just paunchy. And don't forget the savings to the environment, which are difficult to estimate, but nevertheless do exist. Every gallon of gas that you don't burn doesn't put another 20 pounds of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And besides, it is so much fun to ride past people stuck in traffic in their cars as driving to the gym. This was so much fun for me. Coming up Otay Lakes Road towards the college, there used to be a gym on the north side. No, is it really the north side? I don't know where it is. On my right side, coming up from Otay Lakes Road. I guess the west side. Yeah, the west side. And there'd be a line of cars to get into the gym. This is ridiculous. This was a really tiny little parking lot, but it was so much fun. And it's going to get worse. Traffic's going to get worse until we have driverless cars that can take up to 4 or 5 people. And you're not even going to want to have a car, folks. Why? Because you can go outside with your cell phone, call up a car, and if you want to drive alone, that's going to cost you a lot more. But if you don't mind carpooling, then it's going to be a whole lot cheaper. And so if we can just get half of the cars off the road, think about what would happen to the traffic. If we just get two people in a car, if we get 3 or 4 in these driverless cars, then we're really going to see a tremendous savings to the environment, to our time, because it won't be stuck in traffic for so long, because public transit, it just isn't working. We've been trying for decades to get people to get out of their cars, and they just won't do it. We just won't do it. We value our cars. We value the personal, not having to deal with the public transit, the time. And so I'm very hopeful. I'm very hopeful, very optimistic, because driverless cars are coming. You're probably not going to like them, especially if you're the kind of person who likes to drive, what's the word, aggressively, because they're going to drive like your grandmother. They're going to be very cautious. They're going to drive the speed limit. Oh, my goodness. And they're going to be a hell of a lot safer. So I'm optimistic. You decide, because we still have a lot of people who hate the idea of electric cars, hate the idea of driverless cars. They want to drive. They love to drive. And, you know, you feel for them. You feel for them, because it will be a loss. It will be a change. It'll be a serious change to our culture. And we'll have to rewrite a different segment of our history 500,000 years from now. Thank you for your indulgence. Get a bicycle, get a scooter, get a motorcycle, get training. use your vehicle much less, buy a used, reliable vehicle, and tell Piano to go shut up. In our next presentation, next chapter, we will discuss the single most expensive item on our cash flow statement, housing.